while Morgause frowned after him. This wasn't a task Gwydion ever took upon himself, no matter what Agravain wanted. What was with the lad this day? Lochran came back after midday with a fine large fish so heavy Morgause couldn't lift it. She surveyed it with pleasure. It would feed everyone who sat at the high table, and there would be cold baked fish for 3 days. Cleaned, scented with herbs, it lay ready for the baking oven when Gwydion came in, his hands and feet scrubbed clean, his hair combed, and slipped his feet into his sandals again. He looked at the fish and smiled. "Yes, indeed, it will be like a festival," he said with satisfaction.
"Have you done walking all the fences, foster brother?"
Agravain asked, coming in from one of the barns where he had been doctoring a sick pony. "I have, and they are mostly in good order," said Gwydion. "But at the very top of the North Fells, where we had the ewes last fall, there is a great hole in the fences where all the stones have fallen down. You must send men to fix it before you put any sheep to pasture there. And as for goats, they'd be away before you could speak to them." "You went all the way up there alone?" Morgause frowned at him in dismay. "You aren't a goat. You could have fallen and broken a leg in the ravine, and no one would have known for days. I have told you and told you, if you go up on the fells, take one of the shepherd lads with you." "I had my reasons for going alone," retorted Gwydion, with that stubborn set of his mouth, "and I saw what I wanted to see."
"What could you possibly see that would be worth risking some injury and lying there all alone for days?" demanded Agravain crossly.
"I've never fallen yet," Gwydion said, "and if I did, it is I who would suffer for it. What is it to you if I take my own risks?"
"I am your elder brother and ruler in this house," said Agravain, "and you will show me some respect, or I will knock it into you."
"Perhaps if you knocked your head open you could shove some sense inside it," Gwydion said pertly. "For sure, it will never grow there on its own."
"You wretched little—"
"Aye, say it," Gwydion shouted. "Mock me with my birth. You—" "I don't know my father's name, but I know who fathered you. Between the two, I'd rather be in my situation." Agravain took a heavy step toward him, but Morgause quickly rose and thrust Gwydion behind her. "Don't tease the boy, Agravain."
"If he always runs to hide behind your skirts, mother, is it any wonder I cannot teach him to obey?" demanded Agravain.
"It would take a better man than you to teach me that," Gwydion said, and Morgause drew back at the bitterness in his voice. "Hush, hush, child. Don't speak so to your brother," she admonished. And Gwydion said, "I'm sorry, Agravain. I shouldn't have been rude to you." He smiled up, his eyes big and lovely under dark lashes, the picture of a contrite child. Agravain grumbled,
"I'm only thinking of your welfare, you young rascal. Do you think I want you to break every bone in your body? And why would you take it into your head to climb the fells alone?"
"Well," said Gwydion, "otherwise you wouldn't have known of the hole in the fences, and you might have pastured sheep there, or even goats, and lost all of them. And I never tear my clothes, do I, mother?" Morgause chuckled, for it was true. Gwydion was easy on his clothes. There were some boys like that. Gareth had only to put on a tunic, and it was crumpled, stained, and dirty before he had worn it an hour, while Gwydion had climbed the high fells in his saffron holiday tunic, and it looked as if he had that moment taken it from the washing woman. Gwydion looked at Agravain in his working smock and said, "But you're not fit to sit at table with mother in her fine clothes. Go and put on your fine tunic, brother. Would you sit down to dinner in your old smock like a farmer?"
"I won't be ruled by a young knave like you," Agravain growled.
But he did go off toward his chamber, and Gwydion smiled with secret satisfaction. He said, "Agravain should have a wife, mother. He is bad-tempered as a bull in spring. And besides, you shouldn't have to weave his clothes and mend them." Morgause was amused. "No doubt you are right, but I want no other queen beneath this roof. No house is big enough for the rule of two women."
"Then you should find him a wife who's not too well born and very stupid," said Gwydion, "so that she will be glad you can tell her what to do, because she will be afraid of making a mistake among gentlefolk. The daughter of Niall would be about right. She's very pretty, and Niall's folk are rich, but not too rich, because so many of their cattle and sheep died in the bad winter 6 years ago. She would have a good dowry, because Niall is afraid she will not marry. The girl had measles when she was 6 years old, and her eyesight isn't good, and she isn't too broad in the wit either. She can spin and weave well enough, but she's neither the eyesight nor the cleverness for much more, so she will not mind much if Agravain keeps her always breeding."
"Well, well, well, what a statesman you are already," said Morgause caustically. "Agravain should appoint you one of his counsellors, you are so wise."
But she thought, "Aye, he is right. I will speak to Niall tomorrow."
"He could do worse," said Gwydion seriously.
"But I shall not be here for that, mother. I meant to tell you, when I went up on the fells, I saw—"
"No, but here's Donal the hunter. He can tell you."
And indeed the big hunter was already coming into the hall, bending low before Morgause.
"My lady," he said, "there are riders on the road nearing the great house. A sedan chair draped like the Avalon barge, and with them a hunchbacked man with a harp, and servants in the garb of Avalon. They'll be here in half an hour."
"Avalon?" Then Morgause saw Gwydion's secret smile, and knew that he had been ready for this. But he has never spoken of having the sight. What child wouldn't brag of it if he did? And suddenly the thought that he could conceal it, enjoy it yet more that his knowledge was secret, seemed uncanny to her, so that for a moment she shrank away, almost afraid of her foster son. And she knew he saw it, and wasn't displeased. All he said was,
"Now isn't it lucky that we have a honey cake, and baked fish, and that we have all dressed in our best clothing, so we may do honour to Avalon, mother?"
"Yes," Morgause said, staring at her foster son. "Very lucky indeed, Gwydion." As she stood in the front yard to welcome the riders, she found herself remembering a day when Vivian and Taliesin had come to the faraway castle of Tintagel. Taliesin, she supposed, was long past such journeys, even if he was still alive. She would have heard if he had died. And Vivian rode no longer in boots and breeches like a man travelling at speed, a law unto herself. Gwydion stood quietly at her side. In his saffron tunic, his dark hair neatly combed from his face, he looked very like Lancelot.
"Who are these visitors, mother?"
"I suppose it is the Lady of the Lake," Morgause said, "and the Merlin of Britain, the messenger of the gods."
"You told me my own mother was a priestess of Avalon," said Gwydion. "Does their coming have anything to do with me?"
"Well, well, don't tell me there's anything you don't know," said Morgause sharply,
then relented.
"I don't know why they've come, my dear. I haven't the sight. But it may well be. I want you to hand the wine about, and to listen and to learn, but not to speak unless you are spoken to."
That, she thought, would have been hard for her own sons. Gawain, Gaheris, and Gareth were noisy and inquisitive, and it had been difficult to school them to courtly manners. They were, she thought, great friendly dogs, while Gwydion was like a cat, silent, sleek, fastidious, and watchful.
Morgaine as a child had been like that. Vivian did not well when she cast Morgaine aside, even if she was angry with her for bearing a child. And why should it matter to her? She herself bore children, including that damnable Lancelot, who has set Arthur's kingdom so much at havoc that even here we have heard how the Queen favours him. And then she wondered, why did she assume that Vivian hadn't wanted Morgaine to bear this child? Morgaine had quarrelled with Avalon, but perhaps that had been Morgaine's doing, and not the lady's. She was deep in thought, and Gwydion touched her arm and murmured in an undertone, "Your guests, mother." Morgawse sank in a deep curtsy before Vivian, who seemed to have shrunk. Always before this, she had been ageless, but now she looked withered, her face lined, her eyes sunk into her face. But she had the same lovely smile, and her voice was low and sweet as ever.
"Ah, it is good to see you, little sister," she said, drawing Morgawse into an embrace. "How long has it been? I like not to think of the years. How young you look, Morgawse. Such pretty teeth, and your hair as bright as ever. You met Kevin Harper at Arthur's wedding before he was the Merlin of Britain."
It seemed that Kevin, too, had grown older, stooped and gnarled like an ancient oak tree. Well, that was fitting, she thought, for one of those who consorted with oaks, and felt her mouth move in a little ripple of secret mirth.
"You are welcome, Master Harper. Lord Merlin, I should say. How is it with the noble Taliesin? Is he yet in the land of the living?"
"He lives," said Vivian, as another woman stepped from the sedan chair.
"But he is old and fragile now. He will not make such a journey as this again."
And then she said,
"This is a daughter of Taliesin, a child of the oak groves, Ninian. So she is your half-sister, Morgawse."
Morgawse was a little dismayed as the younger woman stepped forward and embraced her, saying in a sweet voice, "I am glad to know my sister." Ninian seemed so young. She had fair reddish-gold hair and blue eyes beneath silky long lashes. Vivian said,
"Ninian travels with me, now I'm old. She's the only one, except myself, dwelling upon Avalon, who is of the old royal blood."
Ninian was dressed as a priestess. Her fair hair was braided low across her forehead, but the blue crescent mark of a priestess, freshly painted with blue dye, could be clearly seen. She spoke with the trained voice of a priestess, filled with power, but she herself seemed young and powerless as she stood next to Vivian. Morgawse sought to recapture her sense that she was hostess, and these were her guests. She felt like a kitchen girl before the two priestesses and the druid. Then she reminded herself angrily that both these women were her own half-sisters. And as for the Merlin, he was only an old hunchback. "Be welcome to Lothian and to my hall. This is my son Agravaine, who reigns here while Gawain is away at Arthur's court. And this is my foster son, Gwydion." The boy bowed gracefully to the distinguished guests, but made only a polite murmur of acknowledgement.
"He is a handsome lad and well grown," said Kevin. "This, then, is Morgaine's son."
Morgawse lifted her eyebrows. "Would it avail anything to deny it to one who has the sight, sir?"
"Morgaine herself told me when she heard that I rode north to Lothian," Kevin said,
and a shadow crossed his face. "Then Morgaine dwells again in Avalon?" asked Morgawse. And Kevin shook his head. Morgawse saw that Vivian, too, looked distressed.
"Morgaine is at Arthur's court," said Kevin.
Vivian said, pressing her lips together,
"She has work to do in the world outside, but she will return to Avalon at the appointed time. There is a place awaiting her which she must take."
Gwydion asked softly,
"Is it of my mother that you speak, lady?"
Vivian looked straight at Gwydion, and suddenly she seemed tall and imposing. The old priestess trick, thought Morgause. But Gwydion had never seen it before. And the lady said, her voice suddenly filling the courtyard,
"Why do you ask me, child, when you already know the answer perfectly well? Would you mock at the sight, Gwydion? Take care. I know you better than you think, and there are still a few things in this world that you do not know."
Gwydion backed away, his mouth open, suddenly only a precocious child again. Morgause raised her eyebrows. So there was still someone and something which could frighten him. For once, he didn't try to excuse or explain himself in his usual glib manner. She took the initiative again, saying, "Come in. All things are prepared to welcome you, my sisters, Lord Merlin." And as she looked at the red cloth she had set upon the high table, the goblets and fine ware standing there, she thought, "Even here at the end of the world, our court is no pigsty." She conducted Vivian to her own high seat and set Kevin Harper next to her. As Ninian was stepping up on the dais, she stumbled, and Gwydion was swiftly there with a ready hand and a polite word. "Well, well, at last our Gwydion is beginning to take notice of a pretty woman. Or is it just good manners or a wish to ingratiate himself because Vivian chided him?" She was perfectly well aware that she would never know the answer. The fish was baked to perfection, the red fish flaking lightly away from the bones, and there was enough of the honey cake for most of the house people to have some. And she had sent for extra barley beer, so that each of the people in the lower hall might have something extra to their meal as well. There was plenty of fresh baked bread, and an abundance of milk and butter, as well as cheese made with ewe's milk. Vivian ate as sparingly as ever, but she was ready in praise of the food. "You set a queenly table indeed. I would not be better guested in Camelot. I had not looked for such welcome, coming without warning as I did," she said. "Have you been to Camelot? Have you seen my sons?" Morgause asked. But Vivian shook her head, and her forehead ridged in a scowl.
"No, not yet. Though I shall go thither at what Arthur now calls Pentecost, like to the church fathers themselves," she said. And for some reason Morgause felt a slight icing of her back. But with her guests she had no leisure to think of it. Kevin said, "I saw your sons at court, lady. Gawain had a small wound at Mount Baden, but it healed clean and is hidden by his beard. He has begun wearing a small beard like to the Saxons, not because he wishes to be like them, but he cannot shave daily without slicing the top from the scar. He may start a new fashion at court." "I saw not Gaheris. He is away to the south fortifying the coast. Gareth is to be made a companion at Arthur's high feast at Pentecost. He is one of the biggest and one of the trustiest men at court, though Sir Kai still bullies him and calls him handsome for his pretty face."
"He should have been made one of Arthur's companions already," said Gwydion jealously. And Kevin looked more kindly on the boy.
"So, you are jealous for your kinsman's honour, my lad. Indeed, he well deserves to be a companion, and he is treated as one now his rank is known. But Arthur wished to show him honour at his first high feast in Camelot, so he will be made companion with all the ceremony the king can manage. Rest you content, Gwydion. Arthur well knows his worth, even as he knows Gawain's, and he's one of Arthur's youngest companions."
Then, even more shyly, Gwydion asked,
"Know you my mother, Master Harper? The lady Morgane?"
"Aye, lad, I know her well," said Kevin gently.
And Morgause thought that the ugly little man had at least a speaking voice that was rich and beautiful.
"She's one of the fairest ladies at Arthur's court, and one of the most gracious, and she plays the harp as well as a bard."
"Come, come," said Morgause, her lips crinkling up in a smile, and amused at the obvious devotion in the harper's voice. "It is well to tell a tale to amuse a child, but truth must be served too. Morgaine fair? She is plain as a raven."
"Igraine was beautiful when she was young. All men knew that.
But Morgaine resembles her not at all." Kevin's voice was respectful, but also amused.
"There is an old saying in the wisdom of the Druids. Beauty is not all in a fair face, but lies within. Morgaine is indeed very beautiful, Queen Morgause, though her beauty resembles yours no more than a willow tree resembles a daffodil. And she is the only person at court to whose hands I will ever trust my lady."
He gestured to his harp, which had been unwrapped and set at his side, and picking up her cue, Morgause asked Kevin if he would favour them with a song. He took up the harp and sang, and for a time the hall was perfectly still except for the harp notes and the bard's voice. And as he sang, the people in the lower hall crept as close as they could to listen to the music. But when he had done, and Morgause had dismissed the housefolk, although she allowed Lachlan to stay, sitting quietly near the fire, she said, "I too love music well, Master Harper, and you have given us a pleasure I shall long remember. But you didn't travel all this long journey from Avalon to the Northland so that I might have feasting with a harper. I beg of you, tell me why you come here so unexpectedly."
"Not so unexpected," said Vivian with a little smile, "for I found you all dressed in your best and ready to greet us with wine and baked fish and honey cakes. You had warning of my coming, and since you had never more than a glimmering of the sight, I can only imagine it was another not far from here who warned you."
She cast an ironic glance at Gwydion, and Morgause nodded.
"But he told me not why, only bade me prepare all things for a festival, and I thought it was a child's whim, no more."
Gwydion was hanging over Kevin's seat as he began to wrap his harp, and he asked, putting his hand out hesitantly, "May I touch the strings?"
"You may," said Kevin mildly,
and Gwydion plucked a string or two, saying,
"I've never seen so fine a harp."
"Nor will you ever. I think there is no finer one here, not even in Wales, where there is a whole college of bards," said Kevin. "My lady was a king's gift to me, and she never leaves my side. And like many women," he added, with a courtly bow to Vivian, "she grows but more beautiful with the years." "Would that my voice had grown sweeter as I grew old," said Vivian good-humouredly, "but the Dark Mother has not willed it so. Only her immortal children sing more sweetly as the years grow longer. May my lady never sing less beautifully than now." "Are you fond of music, Master Gwydion? Have you learned anything of the harp?"
"I haven't a harp to play," said Gwydion. "Coll, who's the only harper at court, has now such stiff fingers that he seldom touches the strings. We've had no music for 2 years now." "I play a little upon the small pipe, though, and Aaron, he that was Lot's piper at war, taught me to play a little upon the pipe of Elkhorn that hangs yonder. He went with King Lot to Mount Beden, and, like Lot, he came not back."
"Bring me the pipe," said Kevin,
and when Gwydion brought it from where it hung on the wall, he rubbed it clean with a cloth, blew the dust from inside it, then put it to his lips and set his twisted fingers to the neat row of holes bored in the horn. He played a little dancing tune, then set it aside, saying,
"I have small skill for this. My fingers are not quick enough. Well, Gwydion, if you love music, they will teach you at Avalon. Let me hear you play a little upon this horn."
Gwydion's mouth was dry. Morgause saw him wet his lips with his tongue. But he took the wood and horn thing in his hands and blew carefully into it. Then he began to play a slow melody, and Kevin, after a moment, nodded.
"That will do," he said. "You are Morgaine's son, after all. It would be strange if you had no gift at all. We may be able to teach you much. You may have the makings of a bard, but more likely of a priest and druid."
Gwydion blinked and almost let the pipe fall from his hand. He caught it in the skirt of his tunic. "Of a bard? What do you mean? Tell me clear." Vivian looked straight at him.
"It is the appointed time, Gwydion. You are druid-born, and of two royal lines. You are to be given the ancient teachings and the secret wisdom in Avalon, that one day you may bear the dragon."
He swallowed. Morgause could see him absorbing this. She could well imagine that the thought of secret wisdom would attract Gwydion more than anything else they might have offered. He stammered and said,
"Two royal lines?"
Vivian shook her head faintly when Ninian would have answered. So Ninian said only,
"All things will be made clear to you when the proper time comes, Gwydion. If you are to be a druid, the first thing you must learn is when to be silent and ask no questions."
He looked up at her mutely, and Morgause thought, it was worth all the trouble of this day to see Gwydion for once impressed even to speechlessness.
Well, she wasn't surprised.
Ninian was beautiful. She looked very much as Igraine had looked as a young girl, or she herself, only with fair hair rather than red. Vivian said quietly,
"This much I can tell you at once. The mother of your mother's mother was the Lady of the Lake, and from a long line of priestesses. Igraine and Morgause also bear the blood of the noble Taliesin, and so do you. Many of the royal lines of these islands among the druids have been preserved in you, and if you are worthy, her great destiny awaits you. But you must be worthy. Royal blood alone makes not a king, but courage and wisdom and far-sightedness. I tell you, Gwydion, that he who wears the dragon may be more of a king than he who sits on a throne. For the throne may be won by force of arms, or by craft, or as Lot won it, by being born in the right bed and begot by the right king. But the great dragon can be won only by one's own efforts, not in this life alone, but those which have gone before. I tell you a mystery."
Gwydion said, I don't understand."
"Of course you do not."
Vivian's voice was sharp.
"Even as I said, it is a mystery, and wise druids have sometimes studied for many lifetimes to understand less than that. I did not mean that you should understand, but that you should listen and hear and learn to obey."
Gwydion swallowed and lowered his head. Morgause saw Ninian smile at him, and he drew a long breath as if reprieved, and sat down at her feet, listening quietly. For once, without trying to make any pert answer or explanation. Morgause thought, perhaps the training of the druids is what he needs.
"So, you have come to tell me I have fostered Morgaine's son long enough, and the time is come when he shall be taken to Avalon and schooled in the learning of the druids. But you wouldn't have travelled yourself by this long road to tell me that. You could have sent any lesser druid to take the boy into his custody. I have known for years that it would not befit Morgaine's son to end his days among shepherds and fisherfolk. And where else than Avalon would his destiny be laid? I beg you, tell me the rest." "Oh, yes, there is more. I see in your faces that there is more." Kevin opened his mouth to speak, but Vivian said sharply, Why should I tell you all my thoughts, Morgause, when you seek to turn all things to your advantage and that of your own sons? Even now Gawain is nearest the High King's throne, not only because of blood, but also in Arthur's love. And I foresaw when Arthur was wedded to Guinevere that she would bear no child. I thought it only likely that she might die in breeding, so I wished not to meddle with what happiness Arthur might have. Then could we have found him afterward a more suitable wife? But I let it go on too long, and now he will not put her away, even though she is barren. And you see in that no more than an opportunity for your own son's advancement. You should not assume she is barren, Vivian.
Kevin's face was set in bitter lines.
She was pregnant before Mountbatten, and she carried this child a full 5 months. She might well have brought it to birth. I think she miscarried because of the heat and the close confinement in the castle, and her own fear of the Saxons. And it was pity for her, I think, which caused Arthur to betray Avalon and put aside the dragon banner.
Ninian said, "So it wasn't only her childlessness, Queen Morgause, by which Guinevere did Arthur such great harm. She is a creature of the priests, and already she has influenced him too well. If some day it should happen that she bear a child that might live to grow up, that would be the worst of all." Morgause felt as if she would stifle. "Gawain,"
Vivian said harshly, "Gawain is Christian as Arthur. He longs only to please Arthur in all things."
Kevin said,
"I know not whether Arthur has any great commitment to the Christian God, or whether it is all Guinevere's doing to please her and pity her."
Morgause said scornfully, "Is that man fit to rule who would forswear his oath for a woman's sake? Is Arthur forsworn, then?" Kevin said,
"I heard him say that since Christ and Mary the Virgin gave him the victory at Mount Baden, he will not put them aside now. And I heard him say more when he spoke with Taliesin, that Mary the Virgin was even as the great goddess, and it was she had given him the victory to save this land, and that the banner of the Pendragon was that of his father Uther, and not his own."
"Still," said Ninian, "he had no right to cast it all aside. We in Avalon set Arthur on his throne, and he owes it to us."
Morgause said impatiently, "What matters it what banner flies over a king's troops? The soldiers need something to inspire their imagination."
"As usual, you ignore the point," said Vivian. "It is what lives in their dreams and imagination that we must control from Avalon, or this struggle with Christ will be lost, and their souls lie in slavery to a false faith. The symbol of the dragon should be always before them, that mankind seek to accomplish, not to think of sin and do penance."
Kevin said slowly,
"I know not. Perhaps it would be as well that there should be these lesser mysteries for the fools, and then could the wise be shown the inner teaching. Perhaps it has been made all too easy for mankind to come to Avalon, and so they value it not."
Vivian said,
"Would you have it that I should sit by and see Avalon go further into the mists, even as the fairy country?" "I'm saying, lady," said Kevin, deferentially but firmly, "that it may even now be too late to prevent it. Avalon will always be there for all men to find if they can seek the way thither, throughout all the ages past the ages. If they cannot find the way to Avalon, it is a sign, perhaps, that they are not ready." "Still," said Vivian in that hard voice, "I shall keep Avalon within the world or die in attempting it."
There was a silence in the hall, and Morgause realized that she was icy cold. She said, "Build up the fire, Gwydion," and passed the wine. Drink, will you not, sister? And you, Master Harper?
Ninian poured the wine, but Gwydion sat still as if dreaming or entranced.
Morgause said, Gwydion, do as I bade you.
But Kevin put out a hand and bade her be still. He said in a whisper,
The boy's in a trance. Gwydion, speak.
It's all blood, he whispered. Blood, poured out like the blood of sacrifice on the ancient altars. Blood spilt on the throne.
Ninian stumbled and tripped, and the rest of the wine, blood-red, went cascading over Gwydion where he sat, and across Vivian's lap. She rose, startled, and Gwydion blinked and shook himself like a puppy. He said, confused,
What? I'm sorry. Let me help you.
And took the wineskin from Ninian's hand.
Oh, it looks like spilt blood. Let me fetch a cloth from the kitchens.
And streaked away like any active lad.
Well, there's your blood, said Morgause with disgust. Is my Gwydion, too, to be lost in dreams and sickly visions?
Mopping the sticky wine from her gown, Vivian said,
Disparage not another's gift, because you have not the sight, Morgause.
Gwydion came back with the cloth, but as he bent to mop it away, he faltered, and Morgause took the cloth from his hand and beckoned one of the serving women to come and dry the table and the hearth. He looked ill, but where normally he would have tried to make more of it for her attention, she saw that he turned quickly away as if ashamed. She ached to take him in her arms and rock him, this child who had been her last baby when the others were grown and gone. But she knew he wouldn't thank her for it, and held her peace, staring down at her linked hands. Ninian put out a hand to him too, but it was Vivian who beckoned him, her eyes stern and unflinching.
Speak the truth to me. How long have you had the sight?
He lowered his eyes and said, I knew not. I didn't know what to call it.
He fidgeted, refusing to look at her. She said quietly,
And you concealed it for pride and love of power, did you not? Now it has mastered you, and you must master it in turn. We came none too soon here. I hope we haven't come too late. Are you unsteady on your feet? Sit here, then, and be still.
To Morgause's astonishment, Gwydion sank down quietly at the feet of the two priestesses. After a moment, Ninian put her hand on his head, and he leaned against her. Vivian turned again to Morgause and said,
As I told you before, Guinevere will bear Arthur no son, but he will not put her aside. All the more because she is a Christian, and their religion forbids a man to put his wife away.
Morgause shrugged and said,
What of that? She has miscarried once, or it may be more than once. And she is not so young a woman, not now. Life is uncertain for women. Aye, Morgause, said Vivian. Once before you sought to trade on that uncertainty of life, so that your son might stand near to the throne, did you not? I warn you, my sister, meddle not in what the gods have decreed.
Morgause smiled.
I thought, Vivian, that you lectured me long, or was it Taliesin, that nothing comes about save by the will of the gods? If Arthur had died ere he came to Uther's throne, why then, I doubt not, the gods would have found another to serve their turn. I came not here to argue theology, you miserable girl, said Vivian angrily. Do you think, if I had my will, that I would have entrusted you with life or death for the royal line of Avalon?
Morgause said with silky wrath,
But the goddess willed it not that you should do your own will, so it seems to me, Vivian. I'm weary of this talk of old prophecy. If there be any gods at all, of which I'm not even certain, I can't believe they would stoop to meddle in the affairs of men.
nor will I wait upon the gods to do what I see clearly must be done. Who's to say that the goddess cannot work through my hands as well as another?
She saw that Ninian was shocked.
Aye, she was another such ninny as Igraine, believing all this talk of gods.
As for the royal line of Avalon, you see I have fostered it well.
He seems strong and well, a healthy boy, said Vivien. But can you swear you have not flawed him within, Morgause?
Gwydion raised his head and said sharply, My foster mother has been good to me. The Lady Morgaine cared not much for the fostering of her son. Not once has she come hither to ask whether I lived or died.
Kevin said severely,
You were bad speak only when spoken to, Gwydion, and you know nothing of Morgaine's reasons or purposes.
Morgause looked sharply at the crippled little bard.
Has Morgaine confided in this wretched abortion when I had to force her secret from her by spells and the sight?
She felt a surge of wrath, but Vivien said,
Enough. You fostered him well while it suited you, Morgause. But I mark you have not forgotten he stands one step nearer the throne than did Arthur at his age, and two steps nearer than your own son Gawain. As for Guinevere, I have seen that she is to play some part in the fate of Avalon. She cannot be wholly without the sight or the vision, for once she broke through the mists and stood upon the shores of Avalon. Perhaps if she were given a son, and it was made clear that it was by Avalon's arts and will.
She glanced at Ninian.
She is capable of conception, with a strong sorceress at her side to keep her from casting forth the child. It is too late for that, Kevin said. It was all her doing that Arthur betrayed Avalon and set aside the dragon banner. The truth is, I suppose, that her wits are not in the right place.
The truth is, said Ninian, that you bear her a grudge, Kevin. Why?
The harper cast his eyes down and stared at his scarred and twisted hands. He said at last,
True. I cannot even in my thoughts deal fair with Guinevere. I am no more than human. But even if I loved her well, I would say she is no queen for a king who must rule from Avalon. I wouldn't grieve should she suffer some accident or mischance. For if she gave Arthur a son, she would think it only the goodness of Christ, though the Lady of the Lake herself stood by her bed. I cannot help but pray she has no such good fortune.
Morgause smiled her cat smile.
Guinevere may seek to be more Christian than Christ's self, she said. But I know something of their scriptures, for Lot had a priest here from Iona to teach the lads. The holy writ runs thus, that he is damned who shall put his wife away, save for adultery. And even here in Lothian we have heard, the queen is hardly so chaste as all that. Arthur is often away at the wars, and all men know how she looks with favour upon your son, Vivien.
You do not know Guinevere,
Kevin said.
She is pious more than reason. Lancelot is so much Arthur's friend that I think Arthur would not move against them unless he took the two of them together in his bed before all of the court.
Even that might be arranged, said Morgause.
Guinevere is too beautiful to think that other women would love her much. Surely someone around her could make an open scandal to force Arthur's hand.
Vivien made a grimace of distaste.
What woman would betray a fellow woman like that?
Morgause said,
I would,
if I were convinced it was for the good of the kingdom.
I would not so, said Ninian. And Lancelot is honourable, and Arthur's closest friend. I doubt he would betray Arthur for Guinevere. If we wish Guinevere set aside, we must look elsewhere.
And there is this, said Vivien, and she sounded tired. Guinevere has done nothing wrong that we know. We cannot set her down from Arthur's side while she keeps the bargain she has made, to be a dutiful wife to Arthur. If a scandal is made, there must be truth in it. Avalon is sworn to uphold the truth. But if there were a true scandal,
Kevin said,
then she must take her chances,
Vivian said.
But I will not be party to any false accusations. Yet she has at least one other enemy,
said Kevin thoughtfully.
Leodegrance of the summer country has just died, and his young wife and her last child with her. Guinevere is queen there now, but Leodegrance had a kinsman. He claims to be a son, but I believe it not. And I think he would like it well if he could claim to be king in the old manner of the tribes, by bedding with the queen.
Gwydion said, It's well they have no such custom at Lot's most Christian court, is it not? But he spoke softly, so that they could affect not to hear him. And Morgause thought, He's angry because he is being ignored, that is all. Am I to be angry because a puppy bites me with his little teeth?
By the old custom, said Ninian,
her pretty brow ridging into little lines, Guinevere is not wedded to any unless she has borne him a son. And if another man can take her from Arthur...
Aye, there's the question, said Vivian, laughing. Arthur can keep his wife by force of arms. And he would do it, too, I doubt not.
Then she sobered.
The one thing we can be certain of is that Guinevere shall remain barren. Should she conceive again, there are spells to make certain she carries not the child to birth, or past the first few weeks. As for Arthur's heir...
She paused and looked at Gwydion, still sitting like a sleepy child, his head resting on Ninian's lap.
There sits a son of the royal line of Avalon, and son to the great dragon.
Morgause caught her breath. Never once, in all these years, had it occurred to her that it was anything other than the gravest mischance that Morgaine had gotten herself with child by her half-brother. Now she saw the complexity of Vivian's plan, and was awe-stricken by the audacity of it. To set a child of Avalon and of Arthur on the throne after his father.
What of the king's stag when the young stag is grown?
For a moment, Morgause didn't know whether the thought had been her own or had come into her head as an echo from one of the two Avalon priestesses before her. Always she had had these disturbing, incomplete moments of the sight, though she could never control when they would come or go, and, truth to tell, hadn't cared to do so. Gwydion's eyes were wide. He leaned forward, his mouth open.
Lady, he said breathlessly, is it true that I am the son of the High King?
Aye, said Vivian, her mouth tight. Though the priests will never acknowledge it. To them it would be sin of all sins that a son should get a son on his mother's daughter. They have set themselves up holier than the goddess herself, who is mother to us all. But it is so.
Kevin turned, slowly, painfully, with his crippled body. He knelt down before Gwydion.
My prince and my lord, he said, child of the royal line of Avalon, and son to the son of the great dragon. We have come to take you to Avalon, where you may be prepared for your destiny. On the morrow, you must be ready to depart.
Chapter 2 On the morrow, you must be ready to depart. It was like to the terror of a dream that they should speak thus openly of what I had kept secret all these years, even during that time when none thought I could live after his birth.
I could have gone to my death with none knowing I had borne a child to my own brother. But Morgause had got the secret from me, and Vivian knew. It was an old saying, three could keep a secret if but two of them lay in their graves. Vivian had planned this. She had used me as she had used Igraine. But the dream was beginning to break up now, and shift and ripple, as if it were all under water. I fought to keep it, to hear. But it seemed that Arthur was there, and he drew a sword, and advanced on Gwydion, and the child caught Excalibur from its scabbard. Morgaine sat bolt upright in her room at Camelot, catching at the blanket. No, she told herself. No. It was a dream, only a dream. I do not even know who sits next to Vivian in Avalon. No doubt it is Raven, not this fair-haired woman so like to my mother that I have seen again and again in my dreams. And who knows if such a woman walks the face of this earth, or Avalon, or whether she is a confused dream of my mother? I don't remember anyone even a little like her in the House of Maidens. I should be there. It is I should be at Vivian's side. And I cast it away of my free will. Look, Elaine called from the window. Already there are riders coming in, and it is three full days till Arthur's great feast. The other women in the chamber crowded around Elaine, looking down at the field before Camelot. Already there were tents and pavilions pitched there. Elaine said, "I see my father's banner. There he rides with my brother, Lamorak, at his side. He is old enough to be one of Arthur's companions now. I wonder if Arthur will choose him as one." "He wasn't old enough to fight at Mount Baden, was he?" Morgaine asked. "He wasn't old enough, but he fought nevertheless, as did every man old enough to hold a sword, and every young boy, too," said Elaine proudly. "Then I doubt not that Arthur will make him one of his companions, if only to please Pellinore," said Morgaine. The great battle of Mount Baden had been fought a year ago, on the day of Pentecost, and Arthur had vowed always to keep this day as a time of high feasting, and to greet all his old companions. On Pentecost, too, he would welcome all petitioners and give out justice. And all the subject kings from the outlying kingdoms would come before the High King to renew their allegiance. "You must go to the Queen and help her dress," Morgaine said to Elaine. "And I must be off as well. I have much to do if there is to be a great feast in only 3 days." "Sir Kai will see to all that," Elaine remonstrated. "Aye, he will see to the feeding and housing of the multitudes," said Morgaine cheerfully. "But it is I must provide flowers for the hall, and see to the polishing of the silver cups. And it is likely I must make the almond cakes and sweets too. Guinevere will have other things on her mind." And indeed, Morgaine was glad to have so much to do for the 3 days of feasting. It took her mind away from the dread and terror of her dream. In these days, whenever Avalon came into her mind in a dream, she shut it out with desperation. She hadn't known that Kevin rode north to Lothian. "No," she told herself, "and I do not know it now. It was only a dream." But once, during that day, when she encountered the elderly Taliesin in the courtyard, she bowed to him. And when he put out a hand to bless her, she said shyly, "Father?"
"Yes, dear child."
10 years ago, Morgaine thought, I would have been angry that Taliesin speaks to me always as if I were still a child of 7, who might crawl into his lap and tug at his beard. Now, obscurely, it comforted her. "Is Kevin the Merlin bound here for Pentecost?"
"Why, I know not, child," said Taliesin with a kindly smile. "He has ridden north to Lothian. But I know that he loves you well, and he will return to you when he can. I think nothing would keep him from this court while you were here, little Morgaine.
Does everyone at this court know that we have been lovers? Surely I've been more discreet than that.
Morgaine said waspishly, Is it common knowledge at this court that Kevin the Harper comes and goes at my bidding, when it isn't even true?
Taliesin smiled again and said,
Dear child, never be ashamed to love. And it has meant everything to Kevin that one so kindly and gracious and beautiful as you.
Do you mock me, grandsire?
Why should I so, little one? You are the daughter of my dear daughter, and I love you well. And you know I think you the most beautiful and gifted of women. And Kevin, I have no doubt, thinks you so even more. And you are the only one at this court, save myself, and the only woman ever, who can speak to him of music in his own language. If you know not that for Kevin the sun rises and sets where you come and go, then you are the only one at this court who knows it not. You deserve it well that he should turn to you as the starshine of his days and nights. It is not even forbidden to the Merlin of Britain that he should marry, if he chooses. Royal he is not, but he is noble in heart, and will one day be high druid, if his courage fails him not. And on the day when he seeks your hand, I do not think either Arthur or myself would say him no.
Morgaine lowered her face and stared at the ground. Aha, she thought. How fitting it would be if I could care so for Kevin as he for me. I value him. I love him well. I take pleasure even in sharing his bed. But marriage?
No, she thought. No, no. Not for all his devotion.
I have no mind to be married, grandsire.
Well, you must do your own will, child, Taliesin said gently. You are lady and priestess. But you are not so young, either. And since you have forsaken Avalon, no, I do not reproach you. But I thought it might well be that you wished to marry and have a home of your own. I would not see you spend all your days as Guinevere's waiting woman. As for Kevin the Harper, no doubt he will be here if he can. But he cannot ride as swiftly as other men. It is good that you do not despise him for his body's infirmity, dear child.
When Taliesin had gone, Morgaine went on toward the brewhouse, thinking deeply. She wished she could indeed love Kevin as Taliesin thought she did. Why am I cursed with this feeling for Lancelot? All the time she prepared scented rose water for washing guests' hands and flavouring confections, she thought about that. Well, when Kevin was here, at least she had no reason to desire Lancelot. Not that it would do her any good, she thought wryly, to desire him. Desire must go two ways, or it is worthless. She resolved that when Kevin came back again to court, she would give him such a welcome as he could wish. No doubt I could do worse than wed with him. Avalon is lost to me. I will think of it. And indeed, my dream saw true so far that he was in Lothian. And I thought the sight had forsaken me. Kevin returned to Camelot on the eve of Pentecost. All that day folk had been streaming into Camelot and the surrounding country, as if it were twice over harvest fair and spring trading fair. It was the greatest festival ever to be held in this countryside. Morgaine welcomed Kevin with a kiss and embrace which made the harper's eyes glow, and led him to a guest chamber, where she took his cloak and travelling shoes, and sent them with one of the boys to be cleaned, and brought him ribbons to make his harp fine.
"Why, my lady will be brave as the queen," said Kevin, laughing at her. Do you not bear grudge to your only rival, Morgaine, love?
He had never called her so before, and she came and stood close to him, her arm around his waist.